102.3 FM.
Shalom from Machane Ramah in the Berkshires. This is Parsha Talk. I'm Rabbi Elliot Malamit, and we have Rabbi Barry Chesler, Rabbi Jeremy Kalmanowski, the boys from the boys of New Paltz, the boys from the Berkshires. Gentlemen, shalom.
Ubracha.
We are in our last Parsha, our last Shabbat of the summer. This is the Shabbat where the Gesher girls wear black. I'm not sure what I feel about that, but I know that they are in a state of, let's say...
They're soon to be in a state of mourning.
You
know, we talked about that in class today. You know, if you love something, you know everything does come to an end. It's like the story of... You have one of the great Malamud stories about the gift that makes the sad man happy and the happy man sad. All things must pass, and if you love something, when it comes to pass, as it inevitably does, then you feel your mourning.
That's the Gamze Yavor. Well, this Parsha Ekev is our third Parsha in Dvarim. It's our last Parsha of the summer, but it's a Parsha also where you get the sense that things are really coming to a close rapidly. Moshe, depending on which midrash you read, I mean, this is all being uttered on the last day, his last day of life. He's got a lot to say, and I want to get into his mind for a moment and simply focus on the things that he is trying to remind the people. It starts out with a reminder of, if you will listen to the commandments, if you will do the commandments, obey the commandments, you will be blessed.
There are a lot of exhortations to do the commandments. He's pounding that in, that their task is to do the commandments. And I think part of it is that they're not entitled. There is the concept of zechut avot, the merits of the fathers, who are far greater than the Israelites, certainly in the rabbinic imagination. But the promise to the fathers can only be realized if the descendants do what God tells them to do.
There seems to be a number of characterizations of Bnei Israel in this Parsha. One which you mentioned, which is, you know, there is the love that God has with the ancestors. There is an implicit characterization of these people as they're not so great. And an explicit, which is Ki'am She'orif. You are a stiff-necked people. You are a people that you're difficult. That's not true.
Well, you know, it is true, first of all, that Moshe, you know, the stories that the Jewish people tell about ourselves are very significant. And Moshe tells them, one thing I don't want you to forget. I don't want you to forget the golden calf. He says, you got to know, you guys had it, you were there, you saw God's great power, you experienced the revelation, and then you went and worshipped the idol. What was up with that? What were you doing? And so he lets them know that they have a capacity for stupidity and cruelty, and tells them in a phrase that will be very important to the Christian Bible, "Umaltim et oilat levavchem," circumcise your heart. Circumcise, we of course think of it as Brit Milah and the physical sign of the covenant, but he tells them that what they have to do is have a soft heart and have an open heart. And then they just might be able to follow this very demanding path. It's not, you know, it's not nothing. But if you have an open heart and a soft heart and a vulnerable heart, then you just might be able to follow this path of holy living.
An unveiled heart, a heart with no barriers and no impediments on that heart, so that there be a full relationship. But if I were an Israelite, I'd have to see a bit of a counselor here for self-esteem issues, because... the leader of my nation is basically telling me you're no good, basically.
I don't agree with that, actually. Then we'll go to Barry.
I take it in a slightly different direction. It's not that he's telling them that they're no good. What he's trying to get across to them, these people have been wandering for 40 years, is now they're coming home. They're not going to be moving again. And in order to keep their home, they have to do certain things. And it's a precious home. It's a home that's blessed with the seven species that the land is blessed with. It is a land that's blessed with all sorts of natural and man-made things that are appealing. And God, through Moshe, wants them to keep it.
Yeah, so I think that's very important, and I also don't really agree that in giving them the litany of all their failings, which it is true, obviously, is intimidating. But I wouldn't use the phrase that they have self-esteem issues, because I think that anybody who says, and by the way, to our listeners, this is very relevant now as we turn from Tisha B'Av towards the high holidays and the period of Tshuva, anybody who says, listen, confront your failings so that you can be your best self in the future, implicitly or explicitly says, you have the capacity to keep this command. It's demanding. You have the capacity, you have the capacity to love and serve God with all your heart and soul, which is, of course, second paragraph of the Shema, which does come from our Parsha.
And there is a lot of love in the Parsha as well. The command to love various things appears over and over again, not just in the passage that Jeremy just mentioned. And there's also a slightly different take on the Exodus experience. You know, we're used to thinking of it as a salvational miracle. And I was struck in looking over the Parsha that God commands us to love the Geirim because we were Geirim. And I think the image we're supposed to have is that God loved us when we were Geirim in Egypt. And therefore, we have to love the Geirim in our land, Eretz Yisrael, just as God loved us. So in a sense, the aspiration is to be B'Tselem Elohim, in God's image.
So let's take on a few texts in specific. And we did mention the text referring to the land. It's probably one of the most exalted and poetic texts that you find in the Parsha, certainly, I think, in the Book of Dvarim. Ki Adonai Eloecha Miviacha El Eretz Tovah. God is bringing you to a good land, Eretz Nachalei Mayim Ayanot Utumot, with streams, springs, fountains issuing from plain and hill, a land of wheat and barley, vines, figs, pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land where you may eat food without stint, where you will lack nothing, a land whose rocks are iron and from whose hills you can mine copper. Ve'achalta v'savata uvirachta et Adonai Elohecha al ha'aretz ha'tovah asher natan lach. And then when you have eaten your fill, give thanks to God for the good land he has given you. So this is a passage Moshe is saying in order to do what for the people? What is he trying to convey here, and how? How is he trying to...
I think he's trying to inspire the people. I think you can't see this passage outside of the second paragraph of the Shema, where everything, despite the water that is promised here, everything is going to depend upon the rain. And the rain is going to depend on your behavior. So on one hand, God is, through Moshe, is exhorting the people that this is really great land, but you have to keep it great. It's not going to stay great by itself.
We have to make Eretz Yisrael great again is what we have to do. And
well, I can't trump that.
Well, I would say that is true, and it is political guidance for the way in which the people are going to maintain the safety and stability of their society. I would also say that it's a teaching about a religious attitude of gratitude, because it is very, very easy, and people should feel proud of their own accomplishments, and people should feel that the houses that they built are great achievements, and the success that they have is great achievements, and people should feel that it's not just, what's the phrase, my man?
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. It's not my strength and my power. But wait a second. I just want to take...
So the idea is to cultivate that sense of gratitude. And when you are in this land, achalta v'savata uveirachta, you got to bless.
Okay, fine. I get it. Okay. Moshe is giving them this lavish description of the land, and he's trying to encourage gratitude, but he's not going there. And this is, I can't help but feel, every time I read something in Devarim about the land, that he's saying, you're getting it, I'm not getting it. Here, it's something great, 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 and I'm missing out on this. I'm going to miss out on this. That's the implication. You, therefore, have a responsibility not only to you, your descendants, but to me. I want you to fulfill this dream of mine. I want to have it, live it out vicariously through you.
Well, I think at the same time that as you so well put it, Moses is feeling his own pain from not being able to approach the land, there's also the recognition that this denial of entrance into the land was based on his own behavior, ultimately.
Right.
And so he's reminding the people from his firsthand experience, I know how bad things can get when we don't do what we need to do.
Okay, so now let's turn to that passage, which is verse 17, chapter 8. V'amarta bilvavecha kochi ve'otzim yadi, or kochi ve'otzim yadi, right? My strength, my power, my might, my own hand have won this wealth for me. Isn't this a harsh sense of put down for the people? In other words, are you that small that you're going to think that everything you do is because of you? Is that a human inclination, or is that something that he's exaggerating in Israel?
No, that's a human inclination. I think that it's very common and not surprising. And in 21st century America, you know, not to harp on the president, although it's so easy, you know, in the course of the campaign, when he was saying that he was a Christian and everything, and at one point somebody said to him, what do you have to be forgiven for? And he said, well, I don't have to be forgiven for anything, and that fits his character. And I remember Joe Scarborough, who was the commentator on Morning Joe, which I like very much, he said, no, that's the essence of Christianity, is to feel your own imperfect and failed nature and to feel God's grace accepting you in your failings. And I think that that little incident with this one particular narcissistic human being to say, this is all about how awesome I am, is a common human maneuver. And I think Moshe is saying, feel grateful for the unearned gifts. God's bringing you to this land. You're going to achieve its benefits. You have responsibilities there. But it's not because you're so cute. It's because we have a brit. We have a covenant.
I think there might be another issue here, which is that since Deuteronomy is so concerned with idolatry, the roots of idolatry are, in fact, narcissism.
Absolutely.
And you know, you could go into the land and cater to your own narcissistic impulse and say, look what I've done.
So the verses that come immediately thereafter are, Bahaya im shachoch tishkach et aronei lohecha, v'halachta acharei elohim acharei.
Indeed, exactly.
So when you think it's your power, that's when you forget God, and that's when you descend into idol worship.
That is exactly a wonderful little Baal Shem Tov. I have to turn the page here to the Vahayim Shema, the second paragraph of the Shema. Where is that?
11.
Verse 13. There we go here. And he says, Baal Shem Tov says, Hishamru lachem, pen yiftel levavchem, v'sartem, take good care, lest your heart be seduced, and you turn ve'avadetem elohim acherim, and turn and worship other gods. The semantic meaning is, lest your heart be seduced and you turn towards other gods. The Baal Shem Tov says, it goes like this, guard yourself lest your heart be seduced and you turn, period, or semicolon, and that is worshiping other gods. To turn your attention away from the spiritual awareness of God is itself a kind of idolatry.
It's such a profound idea. I think it's so underappreciated and underestimated by a modern audience, especially, you know, people in camp. You know, it's hard to talk about idolatry and have it mean something without thinking that this is cartoonish and foolish. Idolatry is not about, you know, stones and wood. Idolatry is really about a fundamental, you know, feature of human nature. That is to say, we like things that can answer questions easily, and we like to be told that we are amazing.
And we like to be in a position of receiving as opposed to feeling that we are obliged to do the hard work. And there's a way in which this is partly the biblical caricature of idolatry, because ancient idolaters, you know, weren't dumb and unreflective. And there are ways of, you know, as the discovery of ancient Near Eastern literature showed, that there were actual religious impulses that people had. But I think that there's a way in which we say, okay, I'm going to do what's best for me now. This is going to work for me. It's going to be pragmatic. And that is a kind of idolatry. The real worship is asking not what I can expect from the world, but what the world can expect from me.
Right. Again, the idolatrous impulses are very prevalent today. We just have to identify them. Then I think one of the dangers that we are encountering, especially in this very, very unique era, is from a theological point of view, the persistence of the idolatrous ideal right in our midst, in our faces.
So if we want to push the verse again, so it says that Adonai Elohecha tira oto tavod uvo tidbak uvishmo tishava, that when it comes to our allegiance and attachment to God, there can't be any halfway measures. We have to cleave to God. We have to embrace Him fully, because if we don't, then idolatry can draw us down.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that embrace God fully is exactly one of the really hard things.
Well, that's why I think the concern with idolatry is so prevalent in this book.
Yeah.
Because it is so hard to overcome.
So hard to do, exactly. And it's a kind of a slightly funny case. Moses says, "Vata Yisrael, Madunai Elohecha Sho'el Me'imach." Listen, Jewish people, what does God really ask for you? It's not a lot. Ki'im. Lirat Adonai Elohecha, lalechet b'chol derachav, la'avoto, la'avodoto, b'chol v'avcha, v'chol nafshecha, lishmor et mitvot Adonai v'et chukotav. What does God ask from you? It's nothing. Just, I want fear of God, I want you to walk in God's ways, I want you to love God, I want you to serve God with all your heart and all your soul, and do all the commandments. Just
and then
that.
And there's time, not you can watch
else.
TV.
So wait a second. But so three of us, we have some literacy in the biblical text, and when we read a verse like that, Ma Hashem Elohecha Sho'el Mimcha, immediately echoing in your ears is an answer that coming from a different book, Micha.
Micha, which says, I think, the Haftarah for Balak, when he says that you're supposed to love the truth, do justice, and walk humbly with God. So here in Devarim, the answer is a little bit different. We were discussing earlier about how theological this particular parsha is, and perhaps all of Devarim, but the few commandments that are here are very political. Oseh mishpat yatom va'amana, v'ohev ger latet lo lechem v'simla, that you need to do justice with the disenfranchised, the orphan and the widow. And you have to love the ger, the alien in your midst, and give him bread and dress. And sometimes we're so zealous for God that we forget that our responsibility is also to the people on earth, including those people who are not directly a part of us, but still are in our community.
When you read Micha, then do you think that Micha is arguing with Dvarim? Do you think that Micha is trying correcting Dvarim, refining Dvarim?
He's expanding it, because Micha is opposing that with the temple cult. Again, the temple itself can become idolatrous worship. If that's all you think you have to do is bring your perfect sacrifice, and you miss the part that the sacrifice is to symbolize the covenant and all these other responsibilities to the people in your community. That's a dangerous thing. So in Micha's generation, it was the temple that was idolatrous, as it were, and so he addresses that community. Mm-hmm. Devarim is looking at the people who are about to enter a land with lots of strangers.
Yeah, I would say that Devarim is such an amazing book, and the religious consciousness of certain kinds of books is like the religious consciousness of Vayikra, for example, is about ritual, and the religious consciousness of Micha is about that interpersonal, and I think the religious consciousness of Devarim, which is such a huge stamp on Judaism, is a sort of a combination of legal and intellectual. You have to study the law and do the law. Obedience, not blind obedience, but intelligent obedience, is very, very core to Devarim. And it can't just be obedience without knowing. You have to love God. You have the kavanah of loving. You have to understand. You have to study it and speak it to your children over and over again. And so I think Devarim is kind of like creating a religious personality that is aligned with God, that understands the law and puts it into practice.
Just, you know, let's just emphasize or highlight, or you want to say?
I want to add one other thing. So the chancellor of the seminary, Arnie Eisen, wrote a book many years ago about Galut, about exile, and Devarim was one of the featured texts in the book because he sees it as a book about homecoming. It's preparing Bnei Yisrael to live in their home. And I was thinking about what you said earlier, Elliot, about this being our last Shabbat, and next week there will be a homecoming for our campers, and one thing they could take with them from camp that perhaps will help them make the transition is Sefer Devarim.
Sefer Devarim, and here this phrase that just occurs all over, B'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha, in Vayayim Shemo, it's in the plural, B'chol levavchem v'chol nafshechem. In other words, there seems to be an emphasis in Devarim on the totality of your being. And that seems to be so difficult to attain.
Totally difficult. And yet, to be a religion is not only a system of conventional behavior, it is shaping your personality. And though it is demanding, I think maybe we say that it's a demand that not everybody can just, you know, can be expected to reach. Maybe it's making a demand, we talked about it in our class, maybe this is a basketball demand and not a soccer demand. Maybe this is a demand to be not one of 11 guys on the soccer team, all of whom cohere, each of them in their, you know, each being a contributor to a bigger thing. But maybe there's a demand here to also be elite, spectacular, amazing, and really push at the bounds of achievement.
But again, it's and if I don't do that, if I can't get to the b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha, am I falling short? Am I failing? What does it really mean?
I look at it a little bit differently. I think that we all recognize that we fail a lot and we deal with our own shortcomings. But I think the cast here is rather than dwell on that, to reach for the sky. In other words, we need to unite ourselves, both as individuals and as a people. And if we think about doing everything b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha, we increase our chances for success. If we only think, how could I ever do this, we're almost dooming ourselves to failure.
I was reading last week a midrash on last week's parsha, the same phrase though, b'chol nishima u'nishima, you should love God with every single breath, and have that kind of kavanah, have that kind of peak experience. You know, we work out, we all work out, we all try to run, we all try to get to a peak cardio rhythm, but you can't live on a peak cardio. You can't live at 150 beats per minute, 145 beats. You can't sustain that. A person can't sustain that. And so what is attainable?
Right. Well, but when you are able to get to that level for 15 minutes, a half an hour, it makes your heart work better when it's going much slower.
Okay. So and take it to the next level. Take it to. Just identify the metaphor here. So if we have...
It's the treadmill of life.
If we have the peak religious experiences, if we have the ability to really work hard and to focus, to have kavanah,
well,
have experiences...
Well, through the week.
Absolutely. You
know, but I would say not only... And 100% true that you're, you know, the metaphor of working out carries it through when you're not working out, and your great experiences carry through the week. But I also think that the question of what you aspire to is very, very determinative. So if you aspire not to eat cheeseburgers, you know, like if we say Judaism says, listen, I really want you not to eat cheeseburgers, then that is an attainable goal that anybody can get. But really, what's it about? Devarim has this image, and it may not be attainable every day, and you may fail, you know, 20 out of 24 hours or something, but if you say the real job is to turn you into a tzaddik, and the real job is to turn you into a person of God consciousness, I think religion needs that. A religion needs that aspiration. And at the very end of the parsha, there's the line about, where is it? This mitzvah, which I command you to do, to love God, to walk in His ways, and to cleave to Him. The Ramban has this awesome comment about what that kind of religious consciousness of cleaving to God is.
Ledavka bo,
devekut, means that as you go through life, you speak with other people, but there is this presence of God that is always with you. And in a few weeks, not here in camp, we're going to get to the most poetic line in the entire Chumash, this commandment which I have is not beyond you. It's not too far from you. It's not up in heaven or over the sea. It's very close to you. You can do this. You can do this. And whether we can all become spiritual masters or not, I don't know. But I think that we can attain a kind of sacred consciousness that shapes our personality.
Are we minimalist then, or are we maximalist here?
I think we're maximalist in this sense. So the last couple verses foreshadow the opening verses of Joshua, and the image is of wherever you set foot, that's what you're going to take possession of. And one thinks, perhaps, that one might set foot on the journey tentatively. But we're going to put our feet down as a nation and take possession. And I think, again, to echo what Jeremy said, it's that aspirational aspect that I think leads us to a more fulfilling journey.
Well, our time is coming to a close here. It's the aspiration that I think we're being left with as we close out this parsha. We have another beautiful haftarah of Nechama, which we won't look into right now. But I think we this is a good note to leave on, which is that the summer takes us from a particular place of beginning to this end point, which is not the end point. I mean, we would love to be doing Parsha talks through Hasidu.
I cannot stress this enough. We wish that we could be doing Parsha talks. And if NPR will just take us up on this, we will do Parsha talks for a nice wide audience.
Right. To Zot HaBracha and really take us to the conclusion. But here, you know, since this is a kind of conclusion for this sector, and it has an aspiration for us, it's not... notwithstanding the difficult things that Moshe has to say here, there's also a sense that he's really leading them right to the end. And he wants only the best for them, only to live in the good land, only to live in the mitzvah, and to live maximalist. But then if you can't do the maximalist, you do whatever you can.
Do what you can.
That's our message to you, Machane Ramah, and to all of our listeners.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.
קול רמה, 102.3 FM.